بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. The following is the full text of the speech delivered on June 4th, 2013 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the supreme leader of the Islamic Revolution, on the occasion of the demise anniversary of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh. The speech was delivered at Imam Khomeini's shrine. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. All praise is due to Allah, the Lord of the worlds, and peace and greetings be upon our Master and Prophet, Abul Qasim al-Mustafa Muhammad, upon his immaculate, pure, chosen, guided, and infallible household, especially the one remaining with Allah on this earth. We are thankful to Allah the Exalted who gave us another opportunity to commemorate our magnanimous Imam rahmatullah alayh on such a day and express our respect for him. Although the memory of our Imam is alive among our people at all times, the 14th of Khordad is the manifestation of the Iranian nation's love for him. This year, the demise anniversary of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh has coincided with the martyrdom anniversary of his great ancestor, Imam Musa ibn Ja'far alayhi salam. Also, this occasion has coincided with the 50th anniversary of the determining and important event that took place on the 15th of Khordad in the year 1342. The 15th of Khordad was an important historical juncture. I would like to briefly discuss a few points in this regard, and then I will discuss the pressing issues that are necessary to discuss. The 15th of Khordad was not the beginning of the great movement by the people and the clergy. Before the 15th of Khordad, important events had taken place in the year 1341, as well as at the beginning of the year 1342. For example, the event in Fazia school took place on the 2nd of Farvardin in 1342. It resulted in the injury of seminarians and the insult to the great Marja-e Taqlid, the late Ayatollah Golpaygani. Before that event, towards the end of the year 1341, there were demonstrations in Tehran's bazaar, and the great Marja-e Taqlid, the late Ayatollah Haj Sayyid Ahmad Khansari, was insulted. These things show that the movement by the clergy had reached such levels in 1341 and early 1342 that security forces of the oppressive regime had started to treat seminarians, religious scholars, and even Marja-e Taqlids in a brutal way. However, the 15th of Khordad of 1342 was a very important juncture. The reason is that the event, which took place on the 15th of Khordad, revealed that the bond between the people and the clergy had reached a so-called dangerous level. In that year, on the anniversary of Ashura, which fell on the 13th of Khordad, our magnanimous Imam rahmatullah alayh delivered a historical speech in Fazia school. Later on, when they had arrested Imam rahmatullah alayh on the 15th of Khordad, there was a great movement in Tehran, as well as in Qom and other cities, and the Taghuti regime decided to do everything in its power to suppress the movement by relying on its army, police, and security organizations. There was a popular uprising on the 15th of Khordad, which was indicative of the strong bond between the people of Iran and the clergy and Marja-e Taqlids, who were represented by Imam rahmatullah alayh. The point is that it was this bond that ensured the spread and victory of the movement. Wherever a movement is supported by the people, that movement will prevail. But if the people do not develop a bond with the protest movement, that movement will fail. For example, after the constitutional movement in Iran, there were certain events and certain activities by both leftist and nationalist groups, but all of them were destined to fail because they did not have the support of the people. When the people step into the arena and support a movement with their hearts and minds and with their presence, it becomes possible for that movement to prevail and achieve victory. The event that took place on the 15th of Khordad proved this point. It proved that our people support the clergy. The arrest of our magnanimous Imam rahmatullah alayh resulted in such an uprising in Tehran and certain other parts of the country that the regime had to step in to suppress the people in a brutal way. A large number of people were killed. The streets of Tehran were covered with the blood of pious people and youths. On the 15th of Khordad, the brutal and ruthless nature of the Taghuti regime was fully revealed. Another point regarding the event which happened on the 15th of Khordad, a point to which our youth and dear people should pay attention, is that no international community and none of the so-called human rights organizations protested against the brutal killings in Tehran and other parts of the country. All of them stayed silent. The people and the clergy remained in the arena. Marxists and leftist groups and governments even condemned the popular movement of the 15th of Khordad. They said that it was a feudalist movement. The nationalists, who were claiming to support anti-government activities, also condemned the movement. They said that the movement was a blind and aimless movement, and that it was a radical movement. Wherever lazy people fail to take risks and play an active role in the arena, they accused pious combatants of extremism. They said that the movement was an extremist movement, and they rejected it as a radical movement. The Imam Rahmatullah Alayh remained in the arena, relying on the support of the people, and he managed to present the image of a truly decisive and determined spiritual leader to all of people and all of history. Our magnanimous Imam Rahmatullah Alayh had three beliefs which made him decisive, courageous, and steadfast. Namely, faith in God, faith in the people, and faith in himself. These three beliefs revealed themselves in the character, decisions, and actions of the Imam Rahmatullah Alayh in the true sense of the word. Imam spoke to the people through his heart, and the people accepted his call with their heart and soul. They stepped into the arena and resisted in a brave way. Their movement, which had no sympathizers in the world and received no assistance, gradually moved towards ultimate victory. I would like to briefly explain the three beliefs of Imam Khomeini, Rahmatullah Alayh. The three points I will discuss in this regard are important points that can illuminate our paths only if they find their way into our hearts. Regarding faith in God, Imam Rahmatullah Alayh was the manifestation of the following verse. Quote, "Those to whom the people said, 'Surely men have gathered against you, therefore fear them.' But this increased their faith, and they said, 'Allah is sufficient for us, and most excellent is the protector.'" Surah 3, verse 173. Close quote. Imam Rahmatullah Alayh was firmly committed to "Allah is sufficient for us, and most excellent is the protector," with all his heart and soul. Imam Rahmatullah Alayh had faith in Allah the Exalted. He had faith in divine promises. He acted, worked, and spoke for the sake of God, and he knew that, open quote, "If you help the cause of Allah, he will help you," close quote. Surah 47, verse 7, is a divine promise, and that it is definite and inviolable. Regarding faith in the people, our magnanimous Imam, Rahmatullah Alayh, knew the Iranian nation in the true sense of the word. Imam Rahmatullah Alayh believed that our nation enjoys deep religious faith and is intelligent and courageous, a nation that has the capacity to shine like the sun in different areas only if it has competent leaders. One time, an incompetent person like Shah Sultan Hussein caused the Iranian nation to retreat into a corner, but another time, a courageous person like Nader Gulli, without those honorary titles, emerged from among the people and became their leader by relying on his courage. As a result, our nation managed to expand the arena of its glory from Delhi to the Black Sea. Imam Rahmatullah Alayh had noticed this truth about our history, and he had witnessed the examples. He believed in this truth. He knew our nation. He had faith in the Iranian nation. The people's deep religious faith, which had been concealed by materialistic people, was revived by our magnanimous Imam Rahmatullah Alayh. He provoked the people's religious pride, and the Iranian nation became the role model of resistance and insight. In the eyes of our magnanimous Imam, the people were the dearest, and enemies of the people were the most hated. The fact that Imam Rahmatullah Alayh did not stop his battle against the domineering powers even for one single moment was mainly because the domineering powers were enemies of the people's happiness, and Imam Rahmatullah Alayh believed that enemies of the people were his enemies too. As for self-confidence, Imam Rahmatullah Alayh taught the people of Iran to be confident. Before instilling a sense of confidence into the people of Iran, Imam Rahmatullah Alayh first revived this sense of self-confidence in himself. He exhibited his faith in his capabilities in the truest sense of the word. On the anniversary of Ashura in the year 1342, while he was alone, Imam Rahmatullah Alayh threatened the Shah that he would ask the people of Iran to force him out of the country if he continued acting like that. He said this among the people and seminarians of Qum in Fazia's school, and he threatened Muhammad Reza Shah, who was wielding unrestricted power in the country by relying on America and other foreign powers. This threat was made by a cleric in Qum who had no weapons, no equipment, no money, and no international support. He managed to resist in this arena by relying on his faith in God and in himself. The day when Imam Rahmatullah Alayhi returned from exile, he threatened the government of Bakhtiar at Behisht-e Zahra Cemetery, and he announced in a resonating voice that he would punch Bakhtiar's government in the mouth and that he would establish another government. This was indicative of the Imam Rahmatullah Alayhi's self-confidence. The Imam had faith in himself and in his capabilities. It was this self-confidence that was transferred to the people of Iran through his words and actions. My dear ones, for 100 years they had convinced us that we were incapable, incapable of managing the country, incapable of achieving dignity and glory, incapable of developing the country, incapable of moving forward in the arena of knowledge, and other such things. And we had started to believe these things. Instilling a sense of inability with the purpose of making nations lose faith in their own capabilities is one of the effective ways in which domineering powers spread their domination over different nations. In this way, they manage to keep the Iranian nation backwards in politics, science, and economic activities, as well as in all other arenas of life. Imam Rahmatullah Alayh reversed the situation, and he took this means of hegemony away from the superpowers. He told the Iranian nation, "You can." He restored our courage, he restored our determination, and he restored our self-confidence. We people of Iran felt that we were capable once more. We moved forward and took action. For this reason, the Iranian nation has achieved victory over the past 30-something years in all the areas that I will discuss later on in this meeting. These three beliefs of Imam Rahmatullah Alayh, namely, faith in God, faith in the people, and faith in himself, became the axis of all of his decisions, actions, and policies. At the beginning of the movement, these three beliefs were a source of energy for the Imam Rahmatullah Alayh. The same is true of the time when he was in exile, the time when he left for Paris, and the time when he returned to Iran. It was these three beliefs that gave Imam Rahmatullah Alayh the power to enter Tehran in those conditions. These three beliefs were exhibited in the events that happened during Bahman of 1357, in the fitnas that happened in the country, in the establishment of the Islamic Republic, in his open resistance against the oppressive global order, in the slogan of "Neither the East nor the West," in the imposed war, and in all the events that took place in those eventful 10 years of Imam's life. These three beliefs were the basis and the core of Imam's decisions, actions, and policies. Even in the last few days of his life, nobody noticed any signs of despair, doubt, exhaustion, weakness, or submission in the words and actions of our magnanimous Imam, Rahmatullah Alayh. Many revolutionaries throughout the world start to have doubts and become conservative as they grow older. Sometimes they even take back their main statements. The statements that were issued by the Imam Rahmatullah Alayh during the last few years of his life were sometimes even more strongly worded and revolutionary than his statements in the year 1342. He was growing old, but he was young at heart, and his soul was vibrant. This is the same steadfastness that has been described in the Holy Quran, open quote, "and that if they should keep to it the right way, we would certainly give them to drink of abundant water," close quote, Surah 72, verse 16. In another verse, Allah the Exalted says, open quote, "As for those who say, 'Our Lord is Allah,' then continue in the right way, the angels descend upon them, saying, 'Fear not, nor be grieved,' and receive good news of the garden which you were promised," close quote, Surah 41, verse 30. These three beliefs kept Imam Rahmatullah Alayh young and vibrant. They consolidated Imam's thoughts and path for our nation. And then these three beliefs gradually spread amongst our own people, our youth and individuals from different social backgrounds. These three beliefs created hope. They created self-confidence, and they resulted in reliance on God. These things replaced despair and pessimism. The people of Iran changed their characteristics, and Allah the Exalted changed their conditions. Open quote, "Surely Allah does not change the condition of a people until they change their own condition," close quote, Surah 13, verse 11. The people of Iran reformed their paths, their movement, and their motives, and Allah the Exalted helped them and supported them. What was the result? The result was that Iran became an independent country. There are many lessons that our dear youth should learn from the dependence of the Taghuti Pahlavi regime, which was even worse than the reactionary and disgraced Qajar regime, on England and subsequently on America. Their dependence had reached a disgraceful level. After the revolution, an outstanding American diplomat mentioned the same thing in his writing. He said that it was the Americans who used to tell the Shah what he needed and what he did not need to do. It was the Americans who used to tell him with whom to establish relationships and with whom not to. It was the Americans who used to tell him how much oil he had to produce and sell. It was the Americans who used to tell him to whom he should sell oil to and whom he should not. Our country used to be managed on the basis of America's policies and plans. And before that, our country used to be run on the whims of England. That dependent country transformed into an independent and proud country. Corrupt, treasonous, and materialistic rulers who were immersed in their carnal desires and human passions, who were in charge of our country, were replaced by representatives of the people. They were replaced by officials who had been elected by the people. In the past 30-something years, the individuals who have assumed power in our country and taken control of our policies and economy have been representatives of the people. They did not line their own pockets after assuming power, which is a very important point. Of course, some of them were more pious than others. Those evil, dependent, and greedy politicians who were submissive against the enemies and treated the people in an angry way were replaced by representatives of the people. Our scientifically backward country transformed into a country that was advanced in terms of science. Before the revolution, we had not made any scientific achievements in the country. Today, international centers say that the rate of Iran's scientific progress is 11 times more than the global average. Is this an insignificant achievement? International scientific centers predict that in a few years, by the year 2017, Iran will rank fourth in the world in terms of science. Is this an insignificant accomplishment? Our country, which had made no scientific achievements, has achieved this position. There was a time that we had to ask foreigners to send their engineers to our country to build dams, roads, and factories for us whenever we needed a road, a highway, a dam, or a factory. Today, Iranian youth are building thousands of factories and hundreds of dams, bridges, roads, and highways in the country without receiving the slightest help from foreigners. Today, our scientific and technological growth and our capabilities to develop the country have reached this level. Would it be appropriate if we ignored these things? In areas relating to health and medicine, Iranian patients who had the money had to travel to Europe for slightly complicated operations, and those who did not have the money had to die. Today, the most complicated operations, liver transplants, lung transplants, and important things in other medical areas, are being carried out in our own country, not just in Tehran, but in many distant cities across the country. These capabilities exist today in our country. The Iranian nation does not need foreigners in this area. Our nation has achieved independence and self-sufficiency in this vital area. Many parts of this country had been ignored. Before the revolution, I used to travel to different places across the country. Remote parts of the country used to be completely ignored. However, different services are being offered in different parts of the country, including in remote towns and villages. Today, nobody can say that a particular area does not have electricity or roads and other such things. Before the revolution, it was surprising to see a remote place that enjoyed such facilities. Today, the opposite is surprising. At that time, our population was 35 million, and there were around 150,000 university students in the country. Today, our population has increased 100%, but the number of university students has increased by 20 or even 30 more times. This means that we have paid more attention to science. The number of students, professors, and universities in the country is remarkable. In every remote town, there are 1, 2, 5, and sometimes even 10 universities. At that time, there were certain provinces in which the number of high schools was less than 10. Today, in every city of the same provinces, there are several universities. This is a great movement by the people of Iran, which is the result of the revolution and selfless efforts of Iranian youth and government officials over the past 30-something years. These are important developments. Thanks to the revolution, many infrastructure-related projects were carried out throughout the country. Thousands of factories were built. Many mother companies were built. The products which we had to beg for and buy in small amounts from foreigners are being mass-produced in our country today. It is necessary to see these things. All of these things are the blessings of the three beliefs that Imam Rahmatullah Alayh instilled into our nation. Faith in God, faith in the people, and faith in oneself. I am not saying these things in order to create a false sense of pride and happiness. I am not saying these things to make you feel happy and thankful for the victory that has been achieved. No, there is still a long way to go. I would say that if we compare our conditions with the era of Taghut, these achievements will look remarkable. But we realize that we have a long way to go if we compare our conditions with the conditions of an ideal Islamic Iran. Namely, a country which Islam wants us to have. A society that Islam wants us to have. A society in which there is worldly pride and welfare, as well as religious faith, ethics, and spirituality, all in abundance. I am saying these things so that our dear youth and courageous nation can realize that they can continue this path by relying on the three beliefs that I spoke about. You should know that there is a long way to go, but you have the capability. You have the power to continue this path. You have the necessary means. You can continue traversing this long path at a high speed until you reach the peaks in a powerful way. I am saying these things so that you realize that the enemies who want to create despair in our hearts are acting out of spite. All the signs show that we should remain hopeful. The roadmap lies in front of our eyes. We have a roadmap. What is this roadmap? Our roadmap is the principles of our magnanimous Imam, Rahmatullah Alayh. The same principles that transformed this backward and humiliated nation into this pioneering and proud nation. These principles will be useful for us along the path, and they will be our roadmap. Imam's principles are clear principles. Fortunately, his statements and writings have been made available to our people in the form of 20-something volumes, open bracket, of Imam Khomeini's speeches, close bracket, and the main points have been presented in his testament. Everybody can refer to those documents and read them. I believe it is not advisable to keep mentioning the name of Imam Rahmatullah Alayh, but rather let his principles... I believe it is not advisable to keep mentioning the name of the Imam Rahmatullah Alayh, but let his principles sink into oblivion. This is wrong. The name and the memory of Imam Rahmatullah Alayh is not sufficient in and of itself. Imam Rahmatullah Alayh will remain a leader for our nation with his principles and his roadmap. Imam Rahmatullah Alayh gave this roadmap to us. He had specific principles. As for domestic policy, the principles of Imam Rahmatullah Alayh require relying on the votes of the people, preserving unity of the people, choosing rulers who are populist and non-aristocratic, open bracket, humble, close bracket, having government officials who are committed to national interests, and making comprehensive efforts in order to bring about progress for the country. As far as foreign policy is concerned, the principles of Imam Rahmatullah Alayh require that we put up a resistance against interventionist and domineering policies, that we establish brotherly relations with other Muslim nations, that we develop relations with all countries except the ones that have drawn their swords against the Iranian nation and are being hostile, that we fight Zionism, that we resist in order to liberate Palestine, that we help oppressed people throughout the world, and that we put up a resistance against oppression. Imam's testament is available to us. His writings and statements have been recorded and are available in the form of books. Regarding culture, the principles of Imam Rahmatullah Alayh require rejection of the permissive Western culture, rejection of rigidity and reactionary attitudes, rejection of hypocrisy in religion, decisive defense of ethics and Islamic commands, and fighting the spread of immorality and corruption in society. As for economic matters, the principles of Imam Rahmatullah Alayh require relying on the national economy, relying on self-sufficiency, ensuring economic justice in production and distribution, defending underprivileged people, and confronting the capitalist culture coupled with respect for ownership rights. Imam Rahmatullah Alayh rejected the oppressive capitalist culture, but he also stressed the need for respecting ownership and property rights, capital and labor. Also, the principles of Imam Rahmatullah Alayh require that we resist melting into the global economy and that we preserve independence of our national economy. These are Imam's principles regarding economic matters. These things are obvious in Imam's statements. Imam Rahmatullah Alayh always demanded government officials of the country to implement these principles in a powerful and wise way. This was the roadmap of our magnanimous Imam Rahmatullah Alayh. The Iranian nation can bridge the gap between current conditions and those ideal conditions by following this roadmap, by relying on their firm religious faith, by remembering their Imam Rahmatullah Alayh. The Iranian nation can move forward. Considering its capabilities and talents and the outstanding individuals who are thankfully present among our people, the Iranian nation can continue the revolutionary path that we have been following over the past 30-something years with more power and firmer determination. by Allah's favor, our nation will be able to become a genuine role model for other Muslim nations. Now let me speak about the elections, which are a sensitive and current issue these days. Dear brothers, sisters, and dear people of Iran, elections are the manifestations of all the three beliefs of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, and we should have faith in the same things. Elections are the manifestation of faith in God, because taking part in elections is a religious obligation. It is our responsibility to play a role in the destiny of our country. Everybody in our country has this responsibility. Elections are the manifestations of faith in the people, because the will of the people manifests itself in the form of elections. It is the people who choose the government officials through elections. Elections are the manifestation of having faith in oneself, because anybody who casts his vote into the ballot box feels that he is playing a role in the destiny of the country, and that his role is determining in its own right. This is a very important point. Therefore, elections are the manifestation of faith in God, faith in the people, and faith in oneself. Giving rise to political valor through epic presence of the people at our polling stations is the most important point regarding the upcoming elections. What is the meaning of valor? Valor means that the attempt to achieve glory should be accompanied by excitement and enthusiasm. Every vote that you cast into the ballot box for any of the 8 honorable candidates is a vote for the Islamic Republic. A vote for any of the candidates is a vote for the Islamic Republic. It is a vote of confidence for the political system and its electoral mechanism. When you enter the arena of elections, either as a voter or as a candidate, your mere presence in this arena means that you have confidence in the Islamic Republic and in our electoral mechanism. On a less important level, your presence results in a vote for the person whom you consider as more valuable for the future of your country than the other candidates. Our helpless foreign enemies are thinking of a way to turn this election into a threat against the Islamic Republic. This is while an election is a great opportunity for the Islamic Republic. They are hoping for a cold and lifeless election so that they can say that the people are not interested in the Islamic Republic, or so that they can create a fitna after the election, just as they did in the year 1388 after that enthusiastic election. These are what the enemies of our nation are after, but they are making a mistake. They do not know our people. The enemies of our nation have forgotten the ninth of day. Those who think that in our country there is a silent majority who are opposed to the Islamic Republic have forgotten that over the past 34 years, massive numbers of people have taken to the streets every year on the 22nd of Bahman in different cities of our country in order to support the Islamic Republic and shout, "Death to America." In order to make our elections lifeless, their think tanks constantly produce ideas and feed them to their media and their spokespersons. One day, they say that our elections have been engineered, and another day, they say that our elections are not free, and yet another day, they say our elections are not legitimate in the eyes of the people. They do not know our people. Neither do they know our elections, nor do they know the Islamic Republic. And those who are aware of the facts make unfair comments. They do not shrink from making such comments. In which part of the world are different candidates, ranging from famous figures to unknown individuals, allowed to use national and state media equally? If somebody knows an exception, he should come forward and say it. In which part of the world does such a thing exist? Does it exist in America? Does it exist in capitalist countries? In capitalist countries, if candidates are members of the existing 2 or 3 parties and enjoy the support of capitalists, company owners, wealthy people, and mafias of wealth and power, they can campaign, and if not, they cannot even campaign. Anybody who has followed American elections, which I have, will confirm this. There were certain individuals who did not enjoy the support of the Zionists and the bloodthirsty international capitalist networks, and they could not enter the arena of elections, no matter how hard they tried. They neither had access to a media outlet, nor were any TV channels available to them. For every second of campaigning, they had to spend huge amounts of money. In our country, candidates are given equal opportunities to speak to the people for many hours through state media without having to spend one single rial or cent. In which part of the world do such things exist? The only thing that controls entry into our elections is the law. According to the law, some people can run in our elections and others cannot. The law has specified what the conditions are, what the qualifications are, and who are in charge of vetting. All of these things are being done on the basis of the law. Our foreign enemies close their eyes to these realities and say certain things, and, as I have pointed out before, sadly there are impious people who repeat the same things. But by Allah's favor and with their presence, resistance, and firm determination, our people will respond to all these machinations and their response will be crushing and decisive. Now, I would like to give a piece of advice to the honorable candidates. The honorable candidates speak critically in the televised programs. This is their right. They can criticize whatever they believe should be criticized. However, they should pay attention to the point that criticism should signify a determination to move towards a future that is full of hard work and glory. It should not signify an effort to paint a bleak picture and promote pessimism and unfair comments. They should pay attention to this point. I do not favor anybody. From this moment onwards, foreign media will say with ulterior motives that I favor a particular candidate. This is a lie. I do not favor anybody. I only lay out the facts. I advise the brothers who want to win the people's trust that their comments should be fair. They can make criticisms, but in doing so, they should not paint a bleak picture and deny the outstanding achievements that have been accomplished under the incumbent administration or previous administrations, thanks to the constant efforts of individuals like themselves. Criticism does not mean denying positive aspects. Criticism means that one should point out the positive things that have been done and then point out the weaknesses and flaws as well. The next president will not have to start from zero. Thousands of outstanding things have already been done. Over the course of many years, thousands of fundamental infrastructure-related projects have been carried out in the country under different administrations. There has been scientific progress. There has been industrial progress. And there has been progress in areas relating to infrastructure. Very important things have been planned and implemented in different areas. They should not disregard these things. Whenever they want to do something, they should start from the achievements that have already been made. We cannot afford to deny all this work under the pretext that we have economic problems, that we have the problem of rising prices and inflation. After all, this is not the right thing to do. Yes, we have economic problems and inflation. By Allah's favor, the person who will be voted into office will be able to resolve these problems and remove these obstacles. This is the wish of the Iranian nation. However, this does not mean that we should deny everything that has been done in order to present a solution to the existing problem. Also, the candidates should not make impossible promises. You should speak in a way that if your recorded statements are replayed to you the next year in Khordad, you do not feel ashamed. Make such promises that you would not have to blame other people under the pretext that they did not let you do what you wanted to do. Only make promises that you will be able to fulfill. In our country, and according to our Constitution, the President has extraordinary powers. The Constitution has given vast powers to the President. The President has control over the national budget. He has control over all executive pillars of the country. He has control over the implementation of the laws and regulations in the country. He has the power to utilize the capacities of all experts throughout the country. The President has room for maneuver in the case of different issues. The only thing that restricts the President in our country is the law. His actions can only be restricted by the law, which is not, in fact, a restriction. The law provides guidance. It does not restrict. The law shows the path and tells us how to move forward. Those who address the people today and say different things should discuss what they are capable of doing and what the people need. They should promise that they will act in a wise and prudent way. If they have plans for different areas, they should present their plans to the people. They should promise that they will move forward on this path in a persistent and steadfast way. They should promise that they will make use of all the capacities of the Constitution in order to carry out their great responsibility. They should promise that they will manage the conditions of the country. They should promise that they will focus their efforts on the economy, which is a challenge that has been imposed on the Iranian nation by foreigners. They should promise that they will not create controversy. They should promise that they will not give their friends and relatives a free rein. They should promise that they will not prefer the interests of foreigners over the interests of the Iranian nation under different pretexts. Some people argue that we should make concessions to the enemies in order to appease them, and in this way they effectively prefer the interests of the enemies over the interests of the Iranian nation. This is wrong. They are angry because you exist, because the Islamic Republic exists, because Imam Rahmatullah Alayh is alive in the minds of the people and in our national plans, because the people show their feelings for Imam Rahmatullah Alayh every year on his demise anniversary. These are the causes of their anger. The enemy's anger should be controlled and suppressed with our national power.
if our nation becomes powerful and capable, if it reduces its needs, if it eliminates its problems, if it manages to improve the economy, which is our main issue today, the enemy will be defenseless against the Iranian nation. In any case, what is important is to have determination, faith in God, faith in the people, and faith in ourselves. And this applies to both the presidential candidates and the people. My dear brothers, my dear ones, there will be a great test in 10 days. And by Allah's favor, we hope that in this test, Allah the Exalted will cause an auspicious instance of valor with brilliant outcomes for our nation. Open quote. There is no power except with the permission of the great Almighty Allah. Close quote. Greetings be upon you, and Allah's mercy and blessings.